The following was recorded at the St. Louis Bi-State Area Convention in 2014. The opinions expressed here on this recording are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
I'm Janine, compulsive overeater, and I'm going to open our meeting. Hi, everybody. Welcome. Thank you for getting up early and coming. Our anonymity, like our abstinence, is a treasured possession. We ask the help of our guests, especially those representing the press or media, to protect the anonymity of all members present. We hope you hear something which you can take away with you and use. We ask that you eliminate any mention of names in reference to members of Overeaters Anonymous, and that no unauthorized pictures be taken. This session is being recorded and posted to the St. Louis OA website. It will not be edited. Anyone wishing to remain anonymous should use a fictitious name. We request that two-hatters, that is, OA members affiliated with related facilities or other anonymous programs, speak only of their personal recovery as OA members at OA meetings in order to help OA avoid endorsement of outside enterprises. We have a basket that's going to start going around after I finish speaking, and it'll go around through the whole meeting. If you come up with a question you want to ask the panel, please feel free. My name's Janine, and I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Janine.
Hi. I have a coin going around that celebrates my most important birthday, and that's my 40th birthday in OA, which was January 21st, 1974, is when I came into this program. And I'm just going to share before I start an interesting thing, because before I came, I was in another 12-step program. And that year, you know, on New Year's, when we make all those resolutions, my only resolution was one I thought I could keep. I had a daily meditation book, not this one. It wasn't available at that time. But I had a daily meditation book, and I made a commitment and a resolution to read a page every day. Well, it's amazing to me that 3 weeks later, on January 21st, I became willing to come to my first OA meeting. They had started a year before, and I had been invited by several program friends to come, but I couldn't afford two meetings a week, get too happy and recovered for my own good. So I kept really battling that battle of whether to come here. I knew I belonged here. So anyway, I thought that was so special that after 3 weeks of daily reading, I found the willingness to get here. And so for my 40th year, I'm not only doing the daily reading, I've made that recommitment to read a page on the page that is the day. I haven't kept it every single day, but it hasn't ever gotten so far back that I couldn't catch up. And also, we have this year this new OA workbook, which includes a question for every day. So I thought, well, you could just add a practice. I haven't been doing a lot of writing lately, so every day I also write an answer in my response to the OA question. Some days it's only a sentence or two, and other days it's a little more in depth. So anyway, that's what I'm doing to celebrate my 40th year. But my abstinence, I've been in 40 years, and 30 of those have been really committed to abstinence. But in the 90s, I had a lot of relapse problems and couldn't seem to get back on track. Didn't realize that it was a deep-rooted resentment that was causing the issues. Can you imagine, after all those years of program, missed the mark on that one. But it was a wonderful learning experience, and I really value it today. The minute I find myself getting into anger and resentment, I become willing to work those steps on it. But this meeting is about steps 2 and 3. Of course, step 1 is admitting we are powerless over food, that our lives have become unmanageable. Well, I want to tell you that I didn't take that step until I was here and abstained for a while. I had no idea how unmanageable the food was. I was so much in denial, I passed the 15-question test that I didn't belong here. So anyway, but steps 2 and 3, I've come, thank you, OA, and thank you all the people who've helped me come to it, a much more understanding of why those steps are so critical to staying in fit spiritual condition, which the big book emphasizes over and over again is required if we're going to want to stay out of the food. We need to maintain our fit spiritual condition. And what I found, and this morning I reread, because this is all we had to rely on when I came in 74, and it's all marked up with OA crossed over AA. But now we have this wonderful book, and this morning I read our 12 and 12, and it was such a wonderful reminder of how step 2 enabled me to really connect connect to God in a way that would help me with the food, help me with my living problems, help me live life without self-destructive behaviors. And they stress in there again and again how the love of all of you does something healing in us that we don't understand. And I just have to thank every single person who loved me through, especially the early years when I didn't even understand the problem. But even more especially those who loved me through the 90s when I was gaining weight each year. You know, I didn't go on an all-out binge. I gained about 8 to 10 pounds a year. But you do that for 8 to 10 years in a row and your considerable amount of weight just creep back on. And I talked to my sponsor about how hard it was during those years to go to back to OA because I felt so bad about not being able to get back on track. And she said to me, Janine, you look for the eyes in that room of the people who love you. There's plenty of them. And you find those eyes and you focus on them and you forget about the rest, the ones you think are judging you. The heck with them. They maybe are. You don't know. It might be your imagination. But you know, I followed that advice. I go to a meeting and I'd intuitively look for that person I knew cared about me, and that was so helpful. So what I understood when reading the pages in the 12 and 12 today was how that love helps connect us to a higher power. I did not realize during the years that it was happening. I did realize at some points I thought, wow, this connection I feel to a certain person is so reminiscent of the way that I'd like to connect to my higher power. But I didn't fully understand it. I think I have a fuller grasp on it today, how healing that was to connect to another human being and then wish to seek that connection to my higher power. Because I was one of those religious people who came here and thought they needed none of that religious stuff in those steps. So that was my roadblock, you know, finding out I needed it and how desperately I needed it and how desperately I needed that love that all of you gave me. And it was funny the things that happened over the years. One time at a business conference, I stood up and debated something that came to be an influencing factor in my life, and it had to do with our literature conference seal of approvals. And I was so scared because I was up there debating as a new person delegate against one of the big popular board members. And after that particular thing was settled, and by the way, it was settled the way I wanted it to be settled, which is very gratifying. Of course, the other is very good for us too, to have to accept the will that isn't ours and accept God's will on an issue. But at this point in time, I really recognized, I thought, gee, you know, why am I so scared? And some gentleman came up to me and said, Janine, he said, that was very courageous of you, and you're a very feminine woman. And it's like the light bulbs went on, and I thought, God, that's where the fear comes from. I somehow see this gift of being able to do this as being masculine, something you admire in men but dislike in women. And from that time on, I had that awareness and I was able to connect to these gifts in a different way and be willing to get up and speak for something that I believed in without worrying if it went my way, knowing if it didn't go my way, I would be willing to accept God's will on the matter. So that was also very important. But this is how people in this program connect to you in ways you can't understand. I mean, to me, even today, I think of that. I thought that was so insightful. I could have wrote forever, I think, and never came into contact with that was my issue of standing up for something that others disagreed with. And my issue was, if a man would be doing that, you think, isn't he courageous and manly? You know, if a woman does it, you think, oh, she's not so feminine. What a fighter, you know? So once I got over that, I was able to do those kinds of things. Now, I can't say without fear, but with an understanding of my fear. And that was a gift given to me by one of you. And in fact, that particular member passed away last year. And I was able to see him in the convalescent home. It was such a gift. And I had not seen him in years, a month before he passed away. And then I came back from a trip I made to Israel in November and found out he had passed on. And I was very, very sad at the loss of this person in our OA fellowship. But I also was so grateful. I said, God, thank you for that gift. You know, that was such a gift to have this unexpected opportunity where I was out in California and able to find out from his wife where he was and go and see him. And then less than a month later, he was no longer with us. So I still thank God for that blessing. But there's so many of you I could mention and mention the people who have influenced my life. And sometimes it took years to realize how their influence and love helped me find my way and helped me. There were times I thought, you know, I think this longing inside to connect to other people is really a longing for my higher power. And that is really true. This innate longing we have to connect is something that is built into us that wants to connect to our higher power, but we just don't know how. But if we keep coming back to these meetings and we listen to the people around us and we find the things that help us, we learn to connect to our higher power in a way that we could never have found on our own, or for me, through my personal religion. I just learned a different type of connectedness. So, second step, came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. Well, first of all, I had to recognize my insanity was partly around food. Secondly, I had to find out how to connect to that power greater than myself in order to help me stay out of the insanity of solving my living problems in stupid ways or solving my food problems in stupid ways. And then once I learned that from all of you, just a day at a time, never waking up and say, I've got it. You know, it doesn't happen that way. It comes just a little bit at a time. Our higher power knows how much we can take in and gives us just a little bit at a time, that which we can handle and understand at that moment. And then as you look back on it, I mean, I just marvel at the gifts that have been given to me over the years. It is just very, very exceptional. And I'm so grateful for the people who were in this program when I came. There were very few of us then. There was one meeting in South St. Louis, gradually came up to 2 and 3 and 4, but there was one meeting in South St. Louis I could go to. And just to show you how our higher power, the night that I decided to go, I thought, geez, about a year ago somebody told me where that meeting was. Maybe I'll go tonight. And I found the person's number, and I got through to him. I mean, that in itself was a miracle beyond understanding. And the meeting had moved, so I'd have never found that meeting in that moment of willingness had I not had those things follow. So as I look back at my life, I see so many things that have been miracles in my recovery. And then I think the third step, those things start happening to us, it becomes easy to turn our life and our will over to the care of God as we understood Him. That part was easy for me, even when I couldn't do it right. I used to be very proud of the fact that I could run into a wall 50 times, having such a headache from trying to do it my way, and finally saying, okay, God, I get it. It's not my way that it's going to be done. I give this up to you. And I thought that was a very successful working of the third step for years. But my progress now is I don't have to beat my head up against the wall. All I have to do is come up against a problem that I don't know how to fix, and I'm able to say to my higher power, this is in your area. You know, please give me the wisdom, the willingness, the insight to go with your will on this matter. And I find peace and I find it easy to do. But you know, I'm not ashamed of the years that I beat my head against the wall trying to make it work out the way I thought it should go out. That too was a part of my progress. And I think we have to be careful not to judge ourselves, not to be so hard on ourselves that we can't put one foot in front of the other. This program, given from a person who's been around for 40 years, is putting one foot in front of the others. And from every time we put one foot behind the other, you know, we find out also things that are helpful. That resentment that I dealt with in the 90s and couldn't forgive myself or even understand how it was harming me, and gradually worked steps 8 and 9 on it and got through it and was able to forgive, that helped me in the next desperate family situation, which was also very serious. And I said, wait a minute here, get some understanding right now. Don't go through this again. Pray for this to be resolved, and you're not in charge of it. It had to do with one of my children. And I was able to give it up and turn it over to a God of my understanding immediately, and I didn't get into the anger and resentments over it. I mean, I felt occasionally annoyed that a kid who I've been trying so hard to raise decently had all these problems and was causing me grief at a time when I didn't need it. But I gave up the anger. I said, God loves him as much as I do. And I turned it over and was able to give it to God and get through it without going into years of creeping back into the food. So this program works if we work it, and one of the best ways to work it is to get close to the people who care about you. And don't be shy about being particular about those people. You know, if you find somebody you don't connect to, don't question it. Just do what you can to find someone that you can connect to. And I love you all, and thank you for being here this morning.
Thank you, Janine.
Hi, my name is Vivian, and I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Vivian.
And incredibly honored to be sitting with these two ladies who bring so much experience to the program. I'm a slow learner. I came to the program first back in the 90s and then again in 2007, and I left in between. So I can't say I've been in program that long. I came back to program in June of 2012, and I've been abstinent since July 10th of 2012. People will say to me, you're working so hard, and I'll just say, no, I'm letting go so hard. So I had actually asked somebody else, I'm the program chair, so I'd asked somebody else to be on this panel, and they got sick. So I had just told my higher power, if I'm supposed to speak somewhere in the convention, then you'll just show me where that is. And so this is where I landed. So here I am. When I came back in July in June of 2012, I should give you a little bit of background. I've been a compulsive overeater since I was 8. I remember coming out of a buffet at the age of 8 and saying to my dad, my stomach hurts, but I just ate. So I know I'm not hungry. And him looking at me and saying, honey, you overate. That's my first recollection of overeating, is at the age of 8. It didn't get better. A couple of times I flipped into anorexia, and that happened a couple of times for months at a time. That I hear is common. Sometimes if you have an eating disorder, you can easily flip into another. But once that was over, it was right back into compulsive overeating. And of course, I thought when I was anorexic that I had control over food, but that wasn't true. I've never had a healthy relationship with food since I was 8. So when I came into the program, which was about 90 pounds ago, I was at a point where I was just covered with self-loathing. And I thought about food all the time. I was just completely hopeless. And I had so little self-worth that the only place I felt any worth was at work. So what I did was I started piling things on my plate at work. And of course, the inevitable happened and things started falling off my plate. I was dropping balls everywhere. I work for an organization that is unique in the sense that the people I work with truly love me, and they loved me enough to do an intervention. And they called me in and they said, we're concerned, we're watching you drop responsibilities, that's not like you. We look at you and we're concerned that in 5 years you won't be here, and that is not acceptable to us. So they did something rather radical. They took my 40 hours, which was really more like 60 hours, and they said, you are only allowed to work 20 hours a week. You're going to keep a timesheet. You're not allowed to work 1 minute over. You spend the rest of that time getting well. So that's what I did. If you'd like to know more about that story, I'll be happy to share more of it with you. But I want to go ahead and move into how steps 2 and 3 intersected with my life. I have had a higher power since I was 7. That I felt like I had a personal relationship with. And my higher power could do anything except one thing, and that was help me figure out how to lose this weight. I was convinced that my higher power was completely powerful, but I've come to realize since I came back into this program that when it came to my overeating, I was a practical agnostic. Believed there was a God, but I didn't think he could do anything about my overeating. Do you remember, though, that I said I came back in the 90s? I started praying back probably in the late 80s, early 90s. God, take this away. Take away this horrible thing with food. And my doctor sent me to OA. But I thought, I don't need this. This was one of the times I moved into anorexia, so I left. Then in 2007, when things had gotten really, really bad again, and I was running again for 300 pounds, I was with a counselor who said, you know what, I think you should try OA. And I said, well, I did that a lot of years ago. I'll go back and try it again. So I tried it again, but then I thought, I can do this an easier, softer way. So of course, I went to one of those lovely pay-and-way clubs and failed. And so it continued those last 7 years between 2007 and when I, or six, I guess, between 2007 and when I came back in 2012. Those years, I just was searching. I just was at that point of there's no hope. But when I came back, somebody started talking to me about what the big book said, and for the very first time, things made sense to me, because I had never understood that my addiction to certain foods was exactly like an alcoholic's addiction to alcohol, and that when I ate certain foods, it triggered this phenomenon of craving in me, and I couldn't stop eating. And for me, if I ate those foods, I couldn't stop eating anything in front of me. It wasn't just those foods, it was everything. But finally, I was at this place of surrender. My higher power had been very patient with me for 19 years and just kept sending me back. I kept praying for an answer. He kept sending me to the answer. And when I came back this last time and I started coming to meetings, I started understanding what was going on. I started asking my higher power, whom I choose to call God, show me a sponsor. Show me who can sponsor me. I felt very, very much that he was pointing me towards this certain lady. I didn't get to ask her at that first meeting, but the second meeting I came back, and in a room of 40 people, when they asked who is an available sponsor, she was the only one to raise her hand. So I felt pretty affirmed. This is who's supposed to be your sponsor. And God gave me an amazing sponsor. But what she said to me that first day was, okay, so I want you to write down your binge foods. And I will tell you that I've never worked with anyone that didn't lay down the sugar that stayed with the program. I would also recommend you don't eat sugar-free desserts, because they can sometimes trigger the craving for the real thing. Well, because finally I had surrendered to God, finally I had surrendered to whatever he was going to put in front of me, I believed that if he gave me this sponsor, part of my surrender to a higher power at this point was surrendering to whatever she told me. So immediately I said, okay. It really did save time on my binge food list to just say sugar. So I just stopped. If you want me to tell you more later about what my food plan is exactly, I'll be happy to do that. But my higher power is so incredibly important to me. I've always believed my higher power was loving, was the opposite of punitive, had cared about me so much that he would go to any length at all, to make it possible for me to have a relationship with him, because he did not want to be punitive. So I was grateful that on top of that, he had been patient. I've since worked with sponsees, some who had come into the program with really no higher power or trying to figure out who their higher power was. And it's just been a joy to just say, well, why don't you write a want ad for your higher power? What is it you're looking for in a higher power? Write that out and then ask your higher power to reveal himself to you. And start talking to him, write letters to him, pray to him. Watching them now is starting to develop that relationship with their higher power. That is such a joy. And I loved what Janine was sharing about the everyday relationship with the higher power. One of the prayers, just the simplest prayers from step 11, is, God, show me your will and give me the strength to do it. And I try to pray that constantly. I actually ask God in the morning, help me remember to pray that all day long. So I was praying it right before I came up here. If I'm in a one-on-one conversation with you, I'm probably praying it silently while I'm talking to you. If I'm on the phone talking to one of my sponsees, I'm praying silently at the same time, God, show me your will and give me the strength to do it. And the amazing thing is that as I live out steps 2 and 3 every single day, and even into every single moment, that he does. He does show me his will, and he does give me the strength to do it. And it is a joy to live in steps 2 and 3 every day. So thanks for letting me share. Oh, you know what? Before we move on, will you just join me, and then let's stand for a moment. Let's just pray the serenity prayer to our higher power. We'll take just a moment, and then Marisha will come and share with us. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thank you. You guys can have a seat. Marisha will come.
My name's Marisha, and I'm a compulsive overeater, anorexic, bulimic. Hi, Marisha.
Hi, Marisha.
I came into program in 1985. I was freed from my anorexia and bulimia in 1986. About 7 years later, things happened and my compulsive overeating came full force again and relapsed, such, whatever it was. And it wasn't until 2011 that I finally came back to deal with it. I was ready to say, that's it, I'm leaving OA for good. But God intervened. I was going to be going to another special program to help me lose weight, you know? Exercise, whatever it was. I was going to do something else. And the reality is, there's no easier, softer way than this spiritual program that we have. I came here in 1985 after I suddenly realized, okay, I'm an alcoholic. Funniest darn thing, I stopped drinking on November 10th, and I thought, I'm going to go and have my last drink on November 10th, and I'm going to go to the store and buy something to drink. Instead of buying something to drink, I was buying every single type of food product that you can imagine. And I realized right then and there, my problem was more with food than it was with drink. Yet I am a binge drinker, so therefore that's part of my program. And my mind will go to drinking as well as it will go to eating. And my mind does it even when I'm asleep. I have dreams of food, I have dreams of that. And therefore, I know that I have a disease that I will not ever recover from. And when I do step one in this program, and when I finally did step one a very different way than I had done it before, I finally looked that I was powerless over food. That's one part. But the reality was, I then had to look at my life being unmanageable. I had to write down every area of my life that was unmanageable. I had to do a good first step. Otherwise, I would not be able to go any further. I had to break down the denial. That was the important part. That was my surrender. That's what I had to do. But then I had to take action. I had my belief in God. I knew God in one way when I was growing up. My parents were very religious. In fact, my mother had gone to become a Franciscan sister and ended up having to leave because of the fact there was abuse going on and the priest was abusing her. So she left. And therefore, I'm a product now of my parents were married over 53 years. But even though that happened, my mother had a religious belief in God. It didn't matter what bad things happened. My mother had a religious belief in God and knew that God was always going to take care of it. It was always God will provide. And in the big book, Evie had Bill said, I don't want to believe it. I don't believe in God. Why do I think that, you know, whatever it is? And Evie said on page 12 in the big book, it says, why don't you choose your own conception of God? And the instant that was being said, the message changed from religious to spiritual. It changed. Religion tells us what to believe. Spirituality says it doesn't make any difference what you believe, but that you are willing to believe in a power greater than yourself. And not until I could admit that I was powerless could I become willing. Not until I did step one was I able to do step two. This Lifeline magazine is one of the best that I've ever seen. It's the August 2012, and it has recovery through the steps and principles. The interesting thing is each step has a principle to it. The first one is honesty. Then being honest and being stripped and finally realizing I've got a hole that has to be filled. Then I need to go on to step two. And step two is hope. Hope. And when I first, there's a picture also in the back of this book here, and it says, Pinocchio was lucky when he told a lie. He immediately became aware of it because his nose grew. If only we could become aware of the dishonesty in ourselves as quickly, because when we lie, our bodies grow. And when we lie, our bodies sometimes get smaller. With me, anorexia and bulimia, I would take and I would not eat for hours. I could go a whole day. But guess what? My body suddenly wasn't able to do that anymore. And I became hypoglycemic. But still, I was going to be eating, and therefore I could put my fingers down my throat, and I had ridges on my hand. And it took almost 10 years of being in program before those ridges finally left my hand. And that's because that's how long the years before that I had been taking and putting down my fingers down my throat. But the reality for me is that I had to look at my step two, and what do I need in a higher power? And what would I like my higher power to be in my life? Because if I didn't look at what I wanted, I wasn't going to get it. If I didn't have my goals set, I wasn't going to have. Step two, and I'm reading from my things here because I don't always feel comfortable. I love the fact that people can just stand up and talk without having prepared in a different way. But for me, I'm so fortunate that I have a God who loves me just where I am and is willing to work with me right where I am. And I didn't have that type of a God before. And I know, hope is a tangible result of my being abstinent and working the steps. While in the food, I was afraid to hope because I had to let myself down so often. It was safer emotionally not to hope at all. And that was the step two. And I'm going to have this handed out because I'm just, that's the step two, because now it's already step three. When I was able to recognize that compulsive overeating is eating to feed my disease, not my body's nutritional needs. Therefore, when I am abstinent, when I eat to feed my body and not my disease, it is that simple. When I eat to feed my body and not my disease, I have a chance. I can, when I finally say, God, this is yours, when I finally let go and say, okay, I found out who my God really is, who I want my God to be, then I can do something different. Am I willing to go to any length to remain abstinent? You betcha. I don't want to go into that stinking thinking. I don't want to be suicidal. I tried suicide 3 times. I don't want to do that anymore. Am I willing to do things I've never done before? You better believe I am. Because if I don't do what I'm supposed to be doing, if I don't call my sponsor, if I don't use the tools of this program, I will not recover. It's like a computer. You write on it and you boot it down that night after you finish what you're doing. And guess what? The next day when you come up to get your computer, it's blank. You have to put in a program in order to get it to be working again. Same thing with this program. You can't depend upon yesterday to take care of today. You have to make a decision each and every day to follow what God wants for you to, in your life. And working the steps and the traditions. And I just, one thing I did say this at the other meeting I was at, how important the traditions are. All we have to do is just the footwork. And we can trust our outcome to a living, loving higher power who provides us with all the resources we need. And then, recovery is a journey, and the 12-step program is a road we travel together in OA. The purpose of Tradition 3 is to ensure that the road will always be accessible to all who wish to travel it. Thus, we say that any 2 or more compulsive eaters who come together to practice the 12 steps and 12 traditions are considered an OA group, as long as that group has no other affiliation. And step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Have you been wallowing in your craziness because of the insanity all around you? What can you allow your higher power to help you with? Let go of the crazy stuff and restore you to a calm center. And that's from the Lifeline, February 2013. Questions are, how does your higher power today differ from the one you knew prior to OA? How would you describe the higher power of your understanding? And how did you find acceptance that the higher power of others is contrary to yours? And it's how do you find, not how did you. What spiritual experience helped you understand the existence of your higher power? And to the atheists, agnostics who might be in this room, how did you reconcile the spiritual side of OA with your beliefs? And what is your comfort level with the spiritual side of OA? Is it too much or just fine given your perspective?
Thank you, Marisha. We have some questions. Thank you all for... what I thought we would do, so we perhaps can have time for general sharing, is we'll divide these questions up, and if you will each take a question and respond in 3 minutes, and then we'll try to limit our stuff. So our first question is relapse sometimes necessary to bring us to step one? And I'm Janine, compulsive overeater. By the way, I forgot to say in my sharing on 2 and 3 that in the last 13, 14 years, I've lost every year 1 pound to 4 pounds, and it's totaled up to 55 pounds. I still have a few more that I wish God had let me get off this body, but I'm very patient with his results at this time. But what I'd like to say about relapse is I found it was necessary to bring me into a really depth of understanding of how those 12 steps help us stay in recovery. Like I said, I'd like to see all of you be able to get up. Once you voice yourself in a meeting, you feel more a part of it. So I encourage you to get up and share when we get there.
Just a word on that question. I would definitely call the times I left OA relapse times. I love how they say we've gone out for more research and development. those research and development relapses for me definitely helped me to finally come to step one. I really did have to come to a place where I hit bottom. And I was fortunate, as I shared with you, that I had some friends who sort of lifted the bottom up to me and forced me down on it. Very much feel like that was a gift from my higher power. But yes, relapse can lead you to step one. I heard someone once say, the best way to hit bottom is to stop digging. Think about it. I thought it was pretty good. Okay, the question I have here is, can we accept that our recovery may make us better, but may never make us, quote, good enough? First of all, great question. And I answer that question differently now than I probably would have 2 years ago. One of the gifts of complete failure is humility. And it's finally understanding the difference between humiliation and humility. Humility isn't thinking less of yourself. It's just not thinking about yourself. I would be lying through my teeth if I were to tell you I was in that place all the time. But I do get a chance to have glimpses of what it means to just be okay with being who I am. That I don't have to accomplish anything to be good enough. I don't have to accomplish anything to have value. If I fail, it doesn't mean I'm not good enough. If I fail, it does not mean I don't have value. I simply am. I am the way God made me. I am letting go hard. I am trying to say, I don't have to have this. I don't have to do this. I don't have to accomplish this. I'm not an utter failure. I'm not an utter disaster because I had a failure. So does that make me better? I think it makes me a little closer to being well. At the World Conference, I heard someone say, we are not bad people trying to become good. We are sick people trying to get well. And that's my story.
This question is it as hard for you to accept that higher power wants you to let go of things you don't want to let go of? The reality is, if I don't let go, I am going to be back into the food. That's the real thing for me. One of the biggest things that it has in the AA 12 and 12, quotation regarding the inclination for many to balk at taking step two, and it's the hoop you have to jump through is a lot wider than you'd think.
So, yes, before I became abstinent, it was harder. But by taking step 3, I am allowing myself to have my miracles begin, and that's by willingness. That means faith, that God is going to do for me what I can't do for myself. In February of last year, I finally realized I could not have artificial sweeteners or any kind of sweetener, and I balked. I truly balked at that. But the reality was I had to stop having the artificial sweetener because they were doing the same thing as sweets. So that was what I had to do. And by being willing to submit to God's will and listen to God in my life, I had a turning point. I was willing to do the changing that I need to do. So, yeah, there are things that I don't want to give over. In fact, my doctor told me, okay, you have to take your medicine this specific way. And I said, I've been taking it this way for the last 20 years. It's worked. Reality was, it didn't work. I had to do what the doctor said. Thank you.
We had 4 questions, so we each took one of them. But maybe some of you had thoughts on those questions you'd like to share. Or this is a nice general question for all of us who are here, because we have kept coming back. We're here in this room. Is there any better way of trying to surrender than to keep coming back? If you would like to line up over here, you'll feel much more a part of the convention once you've gotten up here and shared with all of us. So please, don't knock me over, but head on up. Head on up this way and share with us your thoughts on this question or anything that's in your heart to share. That's just let it be your lead.
My name is Pat. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Pat. Hi.
And, you know, the first thing I thought of when I heard the earlier question, and this is going to tie into the one right now, was about not being good enough, and I thought to myself, by whose standard? Because in my higher power's mind, I'm already good enough because I'm created by that higher power. But I'm also loved enough by that higher power that I don't have to stay there because I'm good enough for today. And I think that's been my experience of surrender, going on to the question that's before us right at the moment. Every day that I take my body to the solution, it seems like there's some micro decision that I end up having to surrender. And I get progressively, and sometimes I boot it and I take it back because I'm an addict and that's what we do. It's in the job description. But I get to become progressively more surrendered, just like people talked about getting progressively more well, more whole, closer to what HP wants for us. Part of that, for me, is to become progressively more surrendered. I'll work a step on something and I'll think, and I've run several issues specifically, and gone through 4 through 9 with that. And then I think, wow, great, thank you so much for this freedom. And then I'll come back around later and I'm like, crap, here I am again. It used to be that I would get really angry at myself or angry at my higher power because, of course, I'm from Lake Wobegon. I want to always be above average, you know. And then I realized, no, this is a part of the process. It doesn't mean that I didn't do it right the first time. It means that more will be revealed. And so I get to get progressively closer to whole, progressively closer to surrender, progressively more in tune with my higher power's will. And in my belief, on this side of the dirt, I'm never going to get it 100%, but that's absolutely okay as long as I continue to suit up and show up and present my body and my mind and my heart to the solution. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Carol, and I am a compulsive eater, bulimic, anorexic, you name it, I got it.
Hi, Carol. Hi, Carol.
First of all, it's kind of dovetailing off of the last person. I'm at a point where I thought I had surrendered everything, and my HP is showing me that I haven't. But it's not because what I did yesterday and everything that I've done up to this point was wrong. It just means that HP has opened up another door for me to look at. And I don't want to, and I'm fighting him on it. So does it ever stop, as previous speaker said? When I'm 6 feet under, or higher, because I got a shelf, but that's okay. This question, is there any better way of trying to surrender than to surrender to keep coming, other than coming back, keep coming back? I've tried them. Let's see, one time when I tried it, I dropped down in weight because I was exercising myself to death. I couldn't see a problem with exercising 2 to 4 hours a day, 7 days a week, and eating once every 2 or 3 days. Then I came back, and I got in my head that, you know, I can do this way. That's when I got up to 282 pounds on a 5'1" frame. I've come back again and again and again. I couldn't tell you how many times I've gone out to do research and development. I love that. But I keep coming back. I keep coming to meetings because it's the only way I can find any sanity. It's the only way I can actually see myself as I am. It's one step at a time. And so I just want to say thank you.
Thank you.
Carol, I'm an addict, and food is my substance.
Hi, Carol.
I wanted to respond to this question because I like it so much. I started coming to OA meetings when I was 60, right around the time I turned 60. I've been abstinent. I've been in relapse. I've been in relapse. Right now, I have about a 90 to 95 pound weight loss from my weight when I entered the program. I don't say that for applause, although thank you very much, because you know I'm a big ham. But what I want to say is that when I first started attending meetings, I would see people at meetings, and they would say, I'm in relapse right now. And I went, oh, well, God, if that happens to me, I wouldn't come back. But every week we went, 3 meetings a week or whatever, keep coming back. And I was really fortunate to have enough humility that by the time I did relapse, almost 3 years into the program, that I never thought of not coming back. I knew, although I had not tried OA before, but I knew that the solution was here, and I knew that my life depended on it, and I knew that I would have to be a lifelong member or that I was not choosing life. It was just that simple. When you weigh 325 pounds and you're 60 years old and your hair has already turned gray, you haven't chosen life. I'll just say for myself, I had not chosen. And so once I chose life, no matter how imperfect, I could hang on. So keep coming back meant the world to me. But the question says, is there any better way of trying to surrender than to keep coming back? And I know that there are times when I was in relapse that I did keep coming back, as in coming back to meetings, but I wasn't working the program. And maybe that's too fine a distinction to make, but for me, if I'm not journaling daily, it took me 3 years to journal. If I'm not journaling daily, if I'm not in contact with a sponsor, if I don't have a plan of eating and an OA action plan, if prayer and meditation aren't part of my daily practice or my 360 out of 365 day practice, I can't live in recovery. I may keep coming back, but those things are essential to me. For the times that I was unable to do those, and when I say unable, I don't mean I've ever been physically unable to do them. I was emotionally not connected, not engaged in the program. The keep coming back to meetings was pivotal. Without it, I think, I don't know where I'd be. It would be pretty ugly, I think, because I would weigh more and be debilitated, is what I suspect. But I do need to have a daily program and a daily contact with my higher power if I want to live in the recovery part of the program and not the relapse. And having experienced both, I highly recommend the recovery part. That's all I've got. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Peggy. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Peggy.
I've been in the program just a short time. This question just spoke to me. I feel like at this point, the keep coming back is all I've got. It's very distracting for me, all the things that I feel like I want to have change, I want my higher power to change for me. It's hard for me to put these practices in place every day that I know are foundational. One day I'll get the prayer in, but I won't get the writing in, and one day I'll have just this tiniest bit of surrender, and the denial just, you know, kind of bury me, and I'm not getting it, 100%. But what I'm seeing is that through the program and through my higher power, things are shifting. Things are changing. I'm seeing the layers of I loved last night the variety of voices that we saw, the shame, the denial, the insecurity, and then the way those were transformed into relationship with God, our higher power and joy and all the things that we can become. And I feel like in these tiny little nuggets in my life, I'm starting to see those shifts happen in different ways. So for me, it is to keep coming back and keep working the program and keep asking my higher power for help with these things, because otherwise I do get buried in, I'm not getting it. I'm not getting it right. Today I didn't do all the things. My perfectionism kicks in and I just feel like I'm a failure. I'm never going to get this and the miracles are never going to happen. And then I see that they do, and in the small ways and sometimes in the bigger ways. And I'm just really grateful. I'm grateful for this conference and all the people who've put it on. And so that's what I'm trying to do.
Hi, I'm Julie. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Julie.
I really love the step two, step three. When I came into program in the early 90s myself, and I left because I had a miscarriage, and I was really angry at God, and I blamed him for it, and I wasn't willing to work through that pain, and I didn't want to deal with that. So I left for a good 13 years, gained all my weight back, plus some. And I got to that point in, I think, 2008. I just couldn't take it anymore, and so I came back. And I am so grateful to be back. My higher power and I, you know, I really had to, like, reform my relationship. And trust, that's the big word for me, is trust. Trust my higher power. In the Voices of Recovery, I think it's in August or something. And it said something about they'll turn something over to their higher power, but God will give them back if they need to work on it. And when I read that, I was like, oh, okay. So if I give something to God, whatever I need to turn over, if I need to take it back, instead of taking it back, God will give it back to me if I need to work on it. And that helps me, because I'm such a control freak that, you know, that I can let go. I can, like, okay, I'll give it to you, knowing that you're going to give it back to me if I have to have it or whatever. And so that helps me a lot. And that makes me more freer to surrender a lot. So I'm just very grateful to be here and be back in the program. So thanks. Thank you.
Hello, my name's Karen, compulsive overeater and incest survivor.
Hi, Karen.
Glad to be here today. Today's 150 days of abstinence by the grace of God. I needed to hear this step two and step three. When I got my current sponsor and it's like, okay, we go immediately to step one. I am powerless over the food. And everything in my life is totally unmanageable today. I say that every single morning on my knees, but when step two and step three came, it was like my conception of God, it was so difficult. And it's been an uphill battle. I've been acting as if that's all I can do today. Thank you for being here.
Hi, I'm Kathy, and I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Kathy.
And I'm an addict. I am a low-feeding addict with black and white thinking. So when I relapse and I get into the food, I totally let go of my higher power, because I feel shame and humiliation and I feel like a hypocrite. So I spend the time in the food without my higher power. When I can put down the food, then I grab on to my higher power again. And it's, you know, obviously, when I mean my higher power the most is when I'm not asking for him. I know that, and that's a good reason to keep the food down. I am in a big book study. My home group is a big book meeting, and we always end our meeting with a reading from the big book on page 164, part of which says, abandon yourself to God as you imagine God. And every time we read that, I just picture myself closing my eyes and just falling back into God's arms. When I can live my life that way, I'm much happier. It's much easier. I mean, the food just doesn't call to me when I do that. So I'm glad I was here for this topic this morning. Thanks.
Thank you.
My name is Kathy. I'm a compulsive over and under eater.
Hi, Kathy.
I think the whole thing of surrender, to me, I really like that reminder from the big book that we just heard. And I love the image because somebody else in my life has been talking about, I forget what expression she uses to describe the exact same thing, but she says she just falls back into and into her higher power. And I've been having to do a lot of that lately. I've been in program for 20 years this last January. And I do consider that I've been abstinent that whole time by the grace of God. I also recently had this nudging inside of me, like I needed to look at what I was eating and how I was eating, and felt willing to go to a professional and get advice on that. Well, instead of getting just a little bit of tweak in what I was doing, my whole food plan was turned upside down in working with this person. And it's been hard. It's been really hard because I went from a food plan that I felt was working, and as someone earlier said, well, I've been doing it this way for 20 years, and now you're telling me, and it's working, and now you want me to do it this way. Well, you want me to do it this way because it's not working. And having to admit that it's not working. Just that surrender, that daily surrender of, you know, here's what, and always finding that when I stop long enough to look for the ways that my higher power is taking care of me, that's what helps me to take the next step and follow through on that. And just one minor example for me was, one of the things that I'm trying to do differently requires doing something with a blender or a mixer or something in the morning, and I didn't have what I needed to do that. And I said, God, I think I need to get a blender to do this thing that I'm being asked to do. And I walk into the silent auction, and there's a blender sitting there. And I'm just like, okay, so you take care of the little things, you're going to take care of the big things, because there was a possibility I might have to have surgery on my hand from this doctor, but this doctor says, no, I think we can do something to prevent that. There's work stuff, changes going on at work, and I still don't know how all that's going to fall out. And so I have to keep saying, okay, help me stay focused on the ways you are taking care of me, so I can keep that hope that in the future these things will be taken care of too. Maybe not the way I'm envisioning them, but you see a bigger picture. That's all I have.
Thank you all for coming up and sharing.
I think this was a great question about the surrender. And so, first of all, I would say if I kept coming back 19 years ago, I would have gotten to surrender a lot sooner, I think. but for me, surrender looks like this. I remember the first time I came back into a meeting, we were reading our invitation to you, and it says something about, or maybe it was in How It Works, about honesty. And I realized I had not been honest with myself and had not been honest with other people. I couldn't, because I wasn't honest with myself. So that was the first thing for surrender. I had to be 100% honest with myself and honest with my sponsor and honest with other people. The second thing was, the big book talks about in We Agnostics, we resigned the debating society. Well, I didn't really need to resign the debating society about my higher power. That I figured out. I just had to believe that he could restore me to sanity. I had to resign the debating society about myself and stop trying to decide how I should do this program. For me, surrender looked like this. Okay, God, I asked you to show me who my sponsor should be. I will now do whatever she says, no questions asked. I'm not going to debate. I'm resigning the debating society. I'm not going to say, well, you're telling me to do this, but I think I should do that. Nope. If she says do it, that's what I'm going to do. And that's what surrender looked like for me.
Hi, my name's Annie. I'm a compulsive overeater, anorexic.
Hi, Annie.
And it's so good to see all of you guys. I love this time of year because a lot of them doing step two in February and step three in March. And it just keeps evolving. It seems someone suggested I look up the definition of each word of each step. And I loved when I looked at the definition of came to believe in a power group, that it just meant moving closer to or nearer to. Because perfectionism is a big thing that pops up a lot for me and can get in my way. And I just love that it's just, you know, it's just progress. It's not perfection. I'm never going to understand my higher power fully. I do love that. And also, a few things. A lot of times I would look at the day and like, you know, what did I do right and what did I do wrong? And anytime I get in the black and the white thinking, there's just no room for God because it's me assuming that I know the truth about everything. I love the set-aside prayer in the big book about, God, please remove my old ideas about X and replace them with a new understanding of this issue, you, God, and myself. A thing that's been coming up a lot lately is just, it's so easy for me to focus on, like, the problem or what I'm not doing right or whatever. And someone said, Annie, anytime you're trying to fix or solve something, where is the room for God in that? You know? So I'm just trying to notice when I have that energy of, like, I need to force something, I need to fix something. It's just like, okay, God, help me take my hands off and just step back and just live in the big book how it says into action, how it's not into thinking. And that's where I usually try to go. And a lady told me, she's like, you know, I can act my way into right thinking, but I can't think my way into right acting. So trust is a big thing for me. Trust of God, trust of myself, trust of other people. A lot of times it is kind of one of those acting as if things. So I just need those little tools of, you know, okay, am I feeding my disease or my recovery? Am I feeding love or am I feeding the fear? And that's where the fellowship is just so huge for me, is just being able to talk honestly. And I love it. The more I talk and share how, like, yeah, I'm totally not trusting God here, I'm totally in my self-will here, they're like, congratulations, you're human. You know, do you want to do something differently now? I feel the most hope when I remember that God is in everything and everyone, and there is no wrong way, and that God can work through anything. So it takes a lot of pressure off. And thanks for all sharing.
Thank you. Well, we're almost ready to close. I'm going to just share something I forgot to share in my talk, because I was one of, like I said, when I came in, this book was my Bible, and I... It says, the intellectually self-sufficient man or woman has difficulty with this program. Secretly, we felt we could float above the rest of the folks on our brain power alone. The God of intellect displaced the God of our fathers. And I really recognized myself in that, thank God. And he gave me a brain tumor about a year and a half ago. So that scared the life out of me. I don't want that part impacted. But I'm glad that I got it out of my system and understood that it isn't brain power that's going to bring you through this program. And I love that our founder, bless her heart, I know she's up there looking over all of us, really, really reinforced the keep coming back in this program. And thank you all. What a good group of sharers we had. Thank you so much. Should we close with the, I put my hand in yours? Okay.
I put my hand in yours, and together we can do what we could never do alone. No longer must we each in hopelessness. No longer must we each depend upon our own unsteady willpower. We are all together now, reaching out our hands for power and strength greater than ours. And as we join hands, we find love and understanding beyond our wildest dreams. Keep coming back. It works when you work it, and you're worth it.